from my standpoint, when I was shopping in the US, it was just terrible. Private label was terrible. And so I thought, oh, this is a real opportunity to like grow this for the client and also introduce it to US consumers in a new way.
Hey, this is Packaging Unboxed. My name is Ellie Montes. Today, we're talking to Danielle Beal about personas, packaging, and private label. Danielle is the founder and director of The Creative Pack. It's a packaging design agency that do an amazing job of creating private label brands via packaging, branding, just the full execution of packaging. Why this episode is important is because we're going to get into what is a persona. Should you even use a persona when you create packaging? How do you determine who that market is? And kind of just drilling down into just this one section of packaging design that a lot of people don't really get into. It's not just the design process, but like, who are your targets? How are you addressing the direction of this packaging? Who should you have in the meetings when you're even identifying where this packaging is going to live and who's going to share the space in your basket with it, right? Like, these are questions that happen really early on in discovery. And if you're not familiar with the way that other agencies are doing it, you're not familiar, if you haven't heard how people do it, kind of make it up on your own. Not only are we going to get into that part of it, we're also going to get into the history of Creative Pack and kind of the work that they've done. And I think it's important, again, just from a packaging design standpoint, to just see how other agencies, how other people address these issues, because you're going to deal with them as a packaging designer, right? You're going to have to design something that you're not necessarily the target for. So how do you find the target? How do you ask questions? How do you pull these people in and have conversations to make sure that you're addressing their need, not selling them a product? So let's just get to the show.
All right. So we've got Danielle Beal, who's joining us. She's the founder and director of The Creative Pack in LA. So you guys are The Creative Pack, and you do a lot of, you don't strictly do private label, but you do a lot of private label. Can you just give us a little rundown on your team and what your focus is?
I actually worked for a British design agency for close to 10 years. And their biggest client was Tesco, which is a retailer in the UK, actually third largest retailer in the world. They invited the company I work for to come to LA and help them launch Fresh and Easy. So I essentially built a team in California to service the client that we were working for. And over the course of 7 years, we created 3,000 private label SKUs across the whole store. So fresh, frozen, non-food, grocery. We touched pretty much every category. So our team was built with that foundation. And then we kind of looked for other clients in the US that could use design help and grew the business from there. So it started with a team of myself and two designers, so three of us. And then for the first couple of years, we actually leaned into all our UK design team who kind of knew the process really well. And obviously, this is mid-2000s. So from my standpoint, when I was shopping in the US, it was just terrible. Private label was terrible. And so I thought, oh, this is a real opportunity to like grow this for the client and also introduce it to US consumers in a new way. So not only were we designing the packaging, the graphics, photo shoots, and all of that, the category team at Fresh and Easy were creating products from scratch. So they weren't just white labeling everyday items. They were tasting tapenades, tweaking the recipes. So when you shopped there, the experience was you couldn't get these products elsewhere. And I think that's one of the foundations that makes it a point of difference. And that's how the UK operates. And they have close to 40% private label penetration. So to come here and it be in the tens, it was just kind of shocking. Like, why don't people trust these brands? Why don't they taste good? Why don't they look good?
Before we started recording, that's kind of what we were talking about. It's like, it used to be where a private label brand was looked down upon in the US. You didn't want to be a designer for a private label brand because you knew it was the bargain bin brand that was just hitting just the basics. There wasn't the flavor. There wasn't the brand recognition. If you were growing up and you opened up your lunchbox going to school and you pulled out the private label version, you'd get a hard time. I think that's kind of how we grew up, but it's changed. So when you got here, private label was in the tens. What is it today?
So I think there are large retailers who've actually built billion-dollar brands. Mm. So you're seeing now, again, kind of the mentality that Europe has, where you can create a brand that goes across the whole store, that customers try, they come back to, the quality's good, you know, the packaging design is appealing, it doesn't feel like you're trading down. And really that loyalty with brands doesn't leave you a lot of room for innovation. So if you can innovate with the products, the brands aren't as nimble. So you can put out something like bone broth or something that's unique that a brand hasn't got time to ideate and do all the market research. And so it really comes down to being nimble and timelines. So I think not only are they building billion-dollar brands, but they're in people's baskets and they're reporting, you know, 15% penetration, which in the size of the US is hugely significant. So just the quality alone is helping. And obviously we like to partner with retailers who are doing new and unique items, but they will also do the basics because those are the things people come back for on a weekly basis. And that helps build the brand too.
And over your shoulder, I see a Penn Awards, a gold Penn Awards. What was that one for?
So we actually did work for Leven Bakery. We designed their CPG cookie packaging, the famous New York bakery. And we actually also, right before COVID in 2019, designed their e-com packaging and took out a bunch of steps in their labor process because they were packaging into bakery boxes and then into shipper boxes and then shipping. And we consolidated it into a packed straight into the shipper box that protects the cookies. Uh-huh. And that's what we won the gold Penta for, which was so awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the Leven Bakery packaging. You've got, I mean, it's beautiful photography. The hierarchy is pretty straightforward. So when this is on shelf, do you consider just who your competitors are, or how do you begin a project like this Leven Bakery?
Well, so the first thing I think is super important is you hire the right people for the right job. So we live and breathe food and beverage packaging. We also do health and beauty, but that's our primary expertise. So our team knows the categories really well. But the first step in any project with any client, even private label, is to look at the competitive research. And one of the unique things I think our agency brings is that we look at the US, but because the US isn't always doing the most innovative things, we actually look to Europe and Asia. A lot of our team travel. They love to eat. They love to explore new foods and cuisines and cultures. And so we're always comp shopping when we're on vacation. Sadly, we're taking pictures. We're bringing back product. But if you're not looking at future-proofing your brand for the next 3 to 5 years, it's really a miss. So I don't recommend clients jump on the bandwagon with a particular trend that's happening now, because it takes months to launch packaging because of the lead times. So you kind of miss the trend before it's happened. So we're out there looking at competitors. We then create a mood board to visually inspire the design. We align with the client on the mood board. And then we come up with multiple concepts. So it's not just this is the one solution for this product or range. We come up with a selection of solutions and then we collaborate with the client and come to the decision on a design. We develop it with any tweaks or changes. And then we go into what we call production, which is we're rolling out every single SKU in that range. So we do the hero on one SKU, but then we stretch it out once we've got an approved design. And then we look back at the research. I think one of the key things that when people have competitors, that's not necessarily a bad thing, especially if their competitor is a brand with a lot of money behind it, because the chances are they've done some research on the hierarchy. They've done a research on the callouts. So if you can take what the competitors are doing and do a better job and future-proof it, your design can stay on shelf for a number of years before you need to refresh or rebrand.
When you're building out packaging, you're brought in to a brand that's doing a private label. I'm looking at like Sensitive Home, All Purpose Cleaner, or like the Silva Bratwurst that you have on your website. If you're competing against existing brands that, like you said, have spent millions of dollars on their product, do you try to compete on, you know, developing packaging that, that hasn't been seen and maybe moving away from some of these category conventions? Or is that a dangerous area to, you know, that you, you think we should, you know, do you think we should move away from category conventions or stay within these category conventions?
Well, I think going back to your first point on how people used to feel about private brands mm-hmm. is really, it was always a knockoff. It was always a me too. It right. wasn't quite the same, but it was dressed up from a marketing and design standpoint to look the same. So we absolutely recommend looking at what is going on, but only taking from that what's relevant. And if a client says to us, we want to match this, or we want to do a knockoff of this, like, to me, that's alarm bells, because that's really not what we're in the business of doing. Never mind the copyright and the lawsuits and all of that. I just think that there's room right now. There's so much, so many cool brands launching, so many unique items that you've got to be ahead of the curve. So to just do a match to something that's out there. Now, we will look at, is illustration right? Does it require photography? Do people understand the product? Do they know what to do with it? Those are actually some of the more key questions to answer, and the design solution that we build should cater to those things. So for example, we launch brands where we've added, you know, product benefits, we've added usage, we've done a photo shoot, maybe it's not on the packaging, it's a photo shoot for your marketing. So even if it doesn't have photography on the pack, there's ways to bring it to life so that people understand the product. But we do a lot of photo shoots, a lot of commissioned illustrations. We do a lot in-house ourselves, so we're able to creatively, you know, control the output. And most of all, we want it to be cohesive, so we don't buy a bunch of stock images. We typically will commission it so it all fits together in a cohesive way. So we want, you know, we don't want someone to launch and that picture is on someone else's brand already. Like,
yeah. Yeah. There's a few years ago, there was like a tomato brand that used this hipster guy's photo on the packaging. And he had like this beard and he was like this burly guy. And then I think somebody did a layout of all the places that this burly guy's picture showed up. And there was like a thing for herpes. There was a thing for like shaving. And then there's this tomatoes.
You can reverse image search. So yeah, it's probably good to, same with naming. It's probably good to double check what's already out there before you go speeding ahead with your.
It's interesting because, like, you know, like I said earlier, own brand was, you know, it was looked down upon. We've got Target, which is almost all own brand, you know, for the most part. When we talk about like food products or clothing, they just continue launching their own product and competing with the brands that they have on shelf. Is there a fear of it flipping where you're going in and everything is own brand?
Well, I think the key point is, unless you're in the industry, consumers don't really know that. Mm-hmm. So obviously we know behind the scenes, some of the background and story, and we know when we're shopping what belongs to Target. But to a lot of regular consumers, I think they think that Threshold might just be a brand and not realize that Target created it. So Target have really done a great job of paving the way for everybody to, you know, up their game, because, you know, just average isn't good enough anymore when you have all these choices. So it could flip, but I think the UK is a good example where there's a place for both. There's a position for well-loved brands that, you know, have unique formulations that you can't mimic, you can't copy. And then there's room for own brand, private brand to come in and live on shelf and not always be a knockoff that's cheaper, maybe do something that's unique and innovative and create their own place in the store, because there's limited store shelves. space, and retail buyers are the ones picking and choosing what goes where. So if it's their own brand, they have the opportunity to merchandise it in the best place in the store,
yeah,
drive sales and get margin. So
yeah, and that's the good. And that's the point with own brand is margin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think margin, that's part of the
differentiation.
Yeah.
Because if you're creating something that someone can't get, you know, people can price shop Kraft mm-hmm. mac and cheese because it's Kraft mac and cheese. So that's they know from one store to another where they're going to buy that. But if you talk about a Good and Gather product that might be like, I don't know, some unique popcorn flavor, you won't be able to find that elsewhere. So differentiation and building loyalty and also delivering value. So it's really not about, you know, making the most margin and being the highest cost that you can get away with. It's about creating value for the customer. Mm-hmm. And if the customer feels that they're being looked after and thoughtful, then obviously they'll come back for more to the store, but also potentially to that particular label too.
That makes sense. And then you're talking about, hey, real quick, this episode is brought to you by idpdirect.com, packaging manufacturers of luxury packaging. They make rigid boxes, foldable boxes, e-commerce boxes. They do shopping bags, garment bags, pouches, everything you possibly think of for your retail brand, but they do it within their own factories. Not only that, they're going to move it all over the world with their warehouses and logistics teams everywhere from Australia to Korea to China to Singapore to all across the US, Canada, South America. Have no problems importing, exporting around the planet, which I didn't realize was an issue. I thought everybody could do that. No, IDP Direct can. Check them out, idpdirect.com. And if you're looking for packaging die lines, like how do you create a shopping bag die line? Well, you can go to packdoor.com. Packdoor.com allows you to type in the dimensions of the bag you're looking for, the box you're looking for, any type of construction, and it outputs that specific template instantly and beautifully. The most exciting part is they have this AI system that's coming. It's already launched in Asia. And what it does is versioning. Imagine creating a shopping bag design, and then you need to put it on a bottle and a box and maybe an e-com box. And you pick those and you put the dimensions in of what it is that you need. Click a button, and that artwork from your bag that's production ready is now applied across multiple SKUs of products. And it gets you like 90% of the way there. It's still production ready. So now you just got to go back in, check barcodes, adjust artwork, make sure things are legible. But it takes the hard work out of the not so fun work. So check them out, backdoor.com. We're also brought to you by our friends at SpecRite. SpecRite is a specification management platform. It's for larger brands that have lots of SKUs. And each of those SKUs has its own set of packaging, barcodes, materials, colors, print processes, manufacturers, like so many things that can happen in packaging. Imagine trying to manage all that stuff on your own. You don't have to. SpecRite.com will take all that information, collect it in one place, and give it to you at the touch of a button whenever you need it. If you need to requote, check a new vendor, or even now that people are having to provide specifications of their packaging to make sure they're not having to pay fines for sustainability across the planet. But check them out. SpecRite.com. Those guys are dope. Let's get back to the show. Target, you know, own brand used to have the store name and logo on the packaging, right? Because that was there was trust there. Target has eliminated that completely, right? All of their brands don't have Target. Is that something that you see happening as well? Is, you know, do you typically put a store brand on your own brand stuff, or is it completely different? Like you're building a brand from scratch?
Yeah, that's a great question. I still think there's both. Target strategy is interesting because I think when they had Market Pantry and some of these brands 10 or 15 years ago that were their own brand, it still had that perception. Whereas I think that what they're leaning into is consumers are already at Target. They're already shopping that category. What can Good and Gather offer? What can some of these other brands, own brand that they've created, offer the consumer when they're shopping, you know, down that aisle? So it's strategic. So I just think we see both. we're still putting logos on packaging, but we're also not necessarily putting the logo, you know, as the largest thing you read with the most prominence. And I think that's part of what used to potentially cheapen the brand, was that it just was plastered with the retailer's name. Now it's about, what is the product? What's great about the product? Oh, it's from this store. That's reassuring. I already trust the experience I'm having here. So we play around with that hierarchy, like how big is the brand in relation to the product title? But what's really exciting is that people are allowing the product design and the packaging to actually stand for something as well. So they're not just getting off the shelf solutions, what everybody does. They're doing resealable packaging for convenience. They might be doing something that's a slightly, you know, reduced amount of packaging from a sustainability standpoint. So they do have control, and it's much harder for the big brands to make those global changes from a physical packaging front. So that's another opportunity that own brand, private brand has.
Wow. I'm looking at like the butcher's bone broth with the illustration of the chicken on there. You've got custom type and, you know, a bunch of different things happening here. So like if we were starting this project from the beginning, is this all done in-house, or are you bringing in illustrators and, you know, typographers? Like how are you building out your team when you're designing a new project?
Yeah, that's a great question. Wherever possible, we're trying to make it as ownable as possible for the client. So we do look for unique, you know, fonts, images, illustrations. With photography, it's pretty much always commissioned photography. We do a ton in-house. So really, photo shoots are one of the only things we outsource. We just recently, over the past couple of years, have commissioned illustrators in particular for a specific style of illustration, but we're carefully art directing that creative. Even if the illustrator has their own style, we're telling them in the design brief, the position, the color, the line weights, what we're expecting to be the brand moment within the illustration. And so our team is art directing if we do outsource anything very carefully. So it's always through our vision. The bone broth is a great example where that particular client was also open to a custom bottle. So that bottle doesn't exist, which is a huge differentiator 5 or 6 years ago when lots of people were getting on the bone broth bandwagon and they were all producing, you know, jars, bottles, pouches. This was modeled on a glass milk style bottle that was taller, but was engineered to the pack size for the ounces for this particular product. And straight off the bat, when we went to the trade show with that package, everybody was like, wow, I've never seen this before. And they actually had the other opportunity, because they're a fresh bone broth, to be merchandised in with the meat. So merchandising is another piece that we don't necessarily get any kind of input on, but asking in the design brief, where is it going to be merchandised? How is it going to be sold? How's the consumer going to interact with it? That particular bottle in the meat department, obviously you see a lot of trays of raw meat or cooked product. You don't see a stand-up bottle of pourable fresh broth. So that level of uniqueness and differentiation has also helped build that brand. It's expensive to do custom and there's a longer lead time, but if you have the means and you're willing to do something unique, it can really stand out for a long time, and you don't see a brand matching that bottle. It's, you know,
for Butcher's Bone Broth, you've got custom bottle shape, which is just, like you said, it's like a milk jug, but it's a smaller, it looks like it fits in your hand. It's like an ivory bone color. Then you've got like the yellow and the blue happening. White lid. It's in with the meat. So completely breaks the shelf, right? You don't see a tray. It's just like all of a sudden these beautiful little bottles versus being next to all the Tetra Pak square box bone broths, mm-hmm. right? Where everything looks the same. And then you have to stop and like actually look and read and specify like what it is that you're looking for. And then you're comparing. I buy a lot of bone broth. So it's like, yeah. So like seeing this in with the meat immediately gives you the sense of freshness that you don't get in the stale, you know, Tetra Pak aisle. So amazing because it does make such a big difference. And that's not something you think about when you're building out product packaging for an own brand. Like there's so many different things that it gives you the flexibility to do. Like you said, like you can merchandise this wherever you want. And I guess it also gives you the flexibility of if it doesn't work where you're merchandising it, you can move it around and find out what works.
Yeah. It's actually been merchandised a few different places. Like it's been in the raw, in with the raw meat where people are scratch cooking. Obviously, it's also a drinkable product. So it has two usage. It's also been in with the deli and the more prepared foods. So it depends on the retailer. Often as a brand, you can't tell them where to put your product. But if you're doing something new and unique, and I liken it to Beyond Meat and Impossible, they were also fighting to be in as an alternative to meat instead of being in the special diet section with the vegan and vegetarian foods. And they won that battle. And now it's very common to see all those plant-based brands next to the meat. But that was something that they fought really hard for because they didn't want to only be accessible to people that were shopping the specialty diet section. They wanted to be an alternative, you know, for a regular consumer who wanted to eat less meat. So merchandising is huge. If you can be in two places in a store, if your product works because you're, for example, a marinade and you can be near the meat department, but also be in the in with the marinades and the seasonings and the salt and pepper, those are the two places people will look for it. Oh, you know, I'm buying meat. Yeah. Let me put this marinade on it. Or I'm down choosing my seasoning. Here's a marinade. So retailers have those options and you don't always get two merchandising opportunities, but I've seen other success with being a product in produce. You know, you now see croutons and toppings in with produce. You see sometimes, you know, caramel dips in near the apples.
Yeah.
It's a logical thing now, but it took somebody promoting themselves like, let's try it here, or someone doing a shipper display, putting it in produce and seeing the product sell really well in that department. So I think that's the other change in the past 15 years is when you used to shop a store, you know, it was very expected. Everything was in the place where you would go and that's the only place. So if you were introducing a new product to a new consumer, they just couldn't find you in a sea of 8 feet of marinades. So that's been amazing to see the retailers shift and think about opportunities because they want to sell more product too. I mean, they should be on that team. They want you to do well. They want to sell more. And
okay. So if somebody's out there and whether it's a student designing a class project or somebody that's launching a new food product in grocery that's going to be on shelf, what's the first step?
I mean, the first step is really identifying what makes your product unique. Mm-hmm. What's better about what you've created? Why did you do this? And usually your why on the product is the why to the consumer. And then going into the store and really digging deep into the category that your product fits in and looking at what's out there. Obviously, you won't see what's coming because someone else is also developing a product that could launch right before your launch. And you see that happen too. But really just getting to know your category. I've seen success where clients will go into the store and talk to consumers, talk to the retailers. They have a lot of power. So if you can dig deep into what you're doing before you go too far with it, you have the agility to kind of develop. Somebody might say to you, like, your usage for bone broth might be different to someone else's usage, and it could be eye-opening. It could be something you hadn't thought of. So I think doing that piece of work, because when a client comes to us with a project or a design brief, we interview them. We have discovery calls on what service do they even need from us? Which parts have they decided? Which parts they haven't? But often they're really close to the product itself, and they're not looking at it from, you know, literally and figuratively, like 3 feet away. So what does it look like to people on the shelf? What's their first impression? What are they going to do with it? Are they familiar? So we ask all these questions, and sometimes, you know, if they've launched a brand before, they know all the answers. And sometimes they're an entrepreneur and they've never been in the food space, and they don't know any of the answers. And so it's very thought provoking, but it's all about timing, because I think if you put a product out there with the wrong branding, you know, you're not going to be putting your best foot forward either for retailers or consumers to interact. So picking the right partner, somebody who gets it, somebody who knows your categories, somebody who knows what they're doing, and taking it seriously, because it's not a cheap endeavor to build a brand from scratch. So if you're in it, you know, you have to be in it for the right reasons with the right resources, I think, to stand a chance of success.
You know, having been in the space for a while, are there any myths that people come to the table with when they're ready for a product, if it's an entrepreneur or anybody that's not been in the space?
Yeah, I will say that more common than not, people will bring a personal preference into the project. And so it's really important to kind of try and be objective about it. And I guess one of the things that people come a little unprepared for is the conversation around who is your demographic. And people will say, it's everyone. Everyone. Well, I guess a myth is you can't really appeal to everyone, nor should you try. Pick the person. It could be you. It could be your age group. It could be your, you know, your shopping habits. But pick someone and appeal to them, and the rest may come. But if you try and make it so broad, I mean, if you've shopped with your parents or a child, they clearly don't look at the same stuff the same way. So to kind of say it's going to be for everyone, okay, that's fine. But pick someone, tailor it to them, be very focused, and then, you know, you can broaden from there. But I think have a really strong point of view on who those people are. Because if they can't afford you, they don't buy that type of product, they don't even get it, you know, you're potentially wasting your time. So let's dig into who that person is, and friends and family can be a good source of conversation when you're first starting out into what do you think? What's your barrier? What's your first impression? Would you use this? How would you use this? So it's sometimes not popular, but sometimes I'll give feedback like on the pack size or the format that they think is the right format for this customer. And I'll sort of ask questions around, well, don't you think people might want to reseal it? They're not going to use it all at once. Like, have you thought about what people are doing in their homes? So you've got to be the consumer and the brand owner at the same time. You got to play both roles.
And if I look at like the Good Now brand of, you know, there's the hydration, there's stomach relief. So it's just like I can't even think of what you would call that.
Over the counter. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the over the counter solutions, like, are you saying that you create this with like one person in mind? I know we do like demographic studies. And, are you picking like one person or like five individual shoppers? Like, how does that work for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting specifically with that brand is that it belongs to GoPuff, which is an app. So the way that you're going to buy it is you're on the app ordering. The data told them that people are searching for pain relief or searching for headache relief or stomach relief, whatever those searches are. So this was an interesting one because there was some digital data about the needs, but also who is their regular consumer on the app and what's the age range of that? What is their income level? I think that was a really cool one because it wasn't necessarily like some projects where it's a whole store with a whole, all types of people shopping there. Like it was pretty targeted. But the other thing is not putting something on shelf that is a knockoff to Tylenol. So we leaned into colorways, we leaned into hierarchy and things that honestly, when you're shopping from one brand to another and over the counter, navigating the information on the pack, how many tablets am I getting? What size are they? How many milligrams? How strong is it? Mm-hmm. So really with that, what we were streamlining is the information to the consumer so that they could shop that range and they would know from one product to another exactly what the tablet looked like, what the size was, what product it was comparing to, what the milligrams were. And because the information's all in the same position on pack, you could essentially buy that whole range for your cabinet. And it's also aesthetically pleasing where it's not a bunch of labels with different brand names, with different pack formats. So that was really about cutting through the noise that people experience when they're standing in a CVS or a Rite Aid, just looking on shelf at like a bazillion choices and just saying, well, here's a consumer on their phone. They need to get it in 1-inch by 1-inch sized image. So we just tried to like clear the noise, lean into the color cues of the brands, give people relief. So we focused on what they were going to get, what their benefit was from each product, and put that in the hierarchy.
Wow. Yeah. Actually, I know I've been at the Walgreens at like, you know, 9 o'clock at night when I've got a sick kid and I'm like, oh my God, which of these do I need to go?
Yep.
And you're just overwhelmed.
The app is a great, another way where that's what you need. You don't really want to be going to the store at 9 o'clock and leaving your kid behind. If you can order that, have it delivered in 30 minutes and stay with your child while they're sick, or same for you when you're sick, you don't want to be out shopping for medicine. So that was a super cool, very unique product, but it really sets the tone that OTC doesn't have to be, you know, ugly or hard to navigate. There's ways to kind of improve. And that's something we bring to every product. Again, if a client says they want to be a me too, it's a little bit of a red flag because I really think everyone has the potential to do better than what's out there today. And we're always striving for best in class solutions.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, back to the point in terms of just like demographics, when you're working, do you drill down a persona? Do you build out a persona or do you focus on like a real person? I've heard the debate, you know, there's enough people out there. We don't need to build personas. So let's just pick a real person. Like how do you address that?
It really depends on the client. So depending on who's briefing us. So I would say for a, like an entrepreneur who's starting a business from scratch, they're not really going to have necessarily that deep understanding. So I think it's good to like pick a person and model it around the person. Another thing that we do is we ask, who do you want to be in the basket with? So what are the brands that you admire that you feel like are a fit for your brand? And that kind of can uncover things without getting into exact demographics, but it's people who buy this. I want to be on shelf next to this. And that's another way to kind of future-proof it because you're picking people or products that are the best in class in their categories. So then it gives you a step forward. But if we're being briefed by a company with large resources with a whole department, they'll often come to us with the information and we're designing to that. So it does depend on the client how we get that information. But
got it.
We're a team of people. We're a team of consumers. We also use ourselves when we're designing and say, would I buy this? Would I be proud to have this? Not that the designs are for everyone always, but I think that's a good sense check because we all, you know,
we all buy.
Yeah. It's not like it's this foreign person. It's you, me, it's our parents, it's, you know, our friends. Like, it's, you know, it's not rocket science sometimes. Yeah.
100%. You know, one thing that's interesting is like, what does it look like in the basket? And I know I'd spoken to the team at Communal Creative out of New York, and that was a big part of their process was if your person is buying these other brands at the same time that they're buying yours, like, all right, put that in a basket.
Mm-hmm.
Does this feel like it's part of that?
Mm-hmm.
Or does this feel like it's the same person, or is this like the outlier?
Yeah. I also think it's interesting when you have a client who's not the demographic trying to lead the design conversation. And I like everybody to do what they do best. So if you're really great at developing products and flavors, that's your thing. If we're really good at creating brands and names and packaging, that's our thing. So the process with a client the best results I've seen is when you work with the client. So they're part of the process. So they feel engaged in it. They don't feel the need to tell you what color to use or what font to use. I mean, if they're hiring us, they should know that that's the part we're going to do really well. We can't change the sugar or salt levels in the product. Yeah. That's on them. So I think it's really important in the client and agency relationship to establish upfront who's going to be commenting, what's their role, and try and keep that throughout the process. So the worst case scenario is you're working with one person and someone else comes in 3/4 of the way through with an alternate viewpoint and opinion. I just like everyone to be involved during the briefing, reviewing the competitors, looking at the mood boards. Then they're highly unlikely to bring a different opinion week 3, week 4.
Mm-hmm.
So really same if you're going to hire someone to, you know, redo something in your house, like don't get under the sink and start messing with it. Like stay in your lane.
I always find it hard to be like, you know, I had a guy fixing my oven. I'm like, hey, you know, how can I help you? Like, I want to see what you're doing.
You can make him a drink or her a drink.
Yeah, right.
Just
be there to support.
Pay the bill on time. Like, do your part well.
Yeah, that's funny. No, that's awesome. So as we start wrapping up, if there's somebody out there that's like interested in, you know, launching a product, launching a brand, like who's the right person to reach out to you? You know, are there certain areas that make the most sense for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think after 8.5 years, once you've built a team and you're not doing this alone and it's a small thing, I think the clients need to be a good fit. It's okay to be in the very beginnings of the ideation of the product. But for us, we want to keep that as a conversation and then engage at a point where they're ready to start both the design process and getting the product on shelf. So sometimes it's timing. If you're looking to launch something in 3 weeks, we're not going to be able to help. Like, it's just your timeline. You know, you're kind of handcuffed from the beginning of the project. So I think understanding, you know, we can help them uncover some parts of their project that they haven't already thought of. We can partner along the way till they're ready to begin. But we need clients to be at a certain stage in their business and also have the right resources to be able to engage. So we're not a huge agency that requires a whole level of hierarchy, but we have a team of talented designers. And so our best clients are either retailers that want to improve, change, or continue their private label program. That's one type of client. A startup who has some backing or funding already established for the process, or an existing CPG brand that is launching a new category or wants management of their current products. Those are kind of our three types of clients. And if it's someone who has a graphic designer cousin who can do it for them, you know, you go enjoy that. Like, you're going to get one person's viewpoint, one opinion, and we're not a good fit, and that's okay. Over 8 years, I've done all kinds of size of projects. So it just needs to be a good match. Otherwise, it's kind of not gelling from the start. So we love to collaborate. We love to meet our clients. Our team meets the clients. It's a very close-knit relationship, and we want to build it over a long period of time. So that bone broth launched, and then we launched more products, and then we did trade show. And so we like to partner for an established amount of time, because I think that builds the best relationship too.
That's great. And is there anything that we didn't cover that you might want to share?
No, just, I guess this is new for me to start to like realize my expertise over the past 10 or 15 years and get to a point where, you know, I'm realizing that the consulting and the advice for brands is just as valuable as the design itself. So I think that's something that is going to grow over the next couple of years, where I'm able to help people with some of that problem solving up front, and also execute great branding and design with the rest of my team. So it's kind of just all coming, you know, to a nice maturity after 8.5 years. So I'm just super excited for the future. And I think, you know, it's only going to get better in terms of branding, packaging, design, like the bars being set higher and higher. Yeah. So you got to keep up with the cool stuff.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's an amazing time for private label. You know, it's not what it was, you know, 10 years ago, not even 5 years ago. Today you're going in and there's a level of trust. I think from a consumer standpoint, when you realize it's a private label, there's also the sense of security that if I don't like it, I can return it because it's the store's brand. Where if I go to the store and I buy, you know, whatever random product, you never really feel like, you know, I could probably return it, but it's such a pain in the butt. But if it's like store brand, there's like, I don't know why there's that comfort level.
You can also give feedback, like, because it belongs to them, they might launch your favorite flavored coffee next year. You just got to talk to the right people. So it's kind of fun. You can have your own spin on it.
Yeah. No, I think private label is huge. So being positioned as the experts in private label is amazing today.
Super proud of all the work we put into it, and now being able to share, you know, what's happening, what's great, and the future is exciting.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on here. All right. Hey, what? You're still here? All right, cool. So since you made it this far, you've joined the Packaging Pact. That means that you're going to go to YouTube. If you're not there, go there now. If you are, well, you're here. And you're going to hit subscribe. Then you're going to go to Apple and you're going to hit subscribe. And you're going to Spotify. You're going to hit subscribe to the podcast. That's what it costs to watch and listen to this. A subscription, right? I'm not charging money. I'm giving you all the information, bringing all these great guests for you. Check them out. Do me that favor. Subscribe. Leave a comment if you have any questions. We'll see you.